it was really a lot of planning and thinking about how does this work best for our workflow. And mm-hmm. so talking to the team, and I may be getting ahead of ourselves, but talking to the team about what do you need and how do you want to use it, that kind of stuff. So that's really where it all came from. It didn't really stem from a we need disaster recovery. It stemmed from what's best for the team and what's best for our workflow. And then it became, wow, if we do this, we can access our data anywhere we go.
Regardless of what the situation is.
Yeah, exactly.
From Bright Umbrella, this is Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, Andy McCormick joins us to talk about disaster planning using the cloud. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
Today's episode is sponsored by Fostermade, a versatile web development agency specializing in custom application development, content management systems, and user experience design. Through partnerships with designers, agencies, and organizations, Fostermade is committed to building better digital experiences. Visit fostermade.co to learn more. This episode is also brought to you by our friends at Jumpchart. When you're planning a website, collaborating with clients, developing architecture, and drafting content, Jumpchart is where you can manage, well, all of it. Jumpchart lets you update meta content, export to Drupal, HTML, and WordPress, and draft better web content. But the best part is it's all browser-based, so you don't have to worry about backing up your projects in case of a disaster. Jumpchart takes care of all of that and more. To plan better websites, visit jumpchart.com/controlclickcast, and we'll have the link spelled out in our show notes.
Our guest today is Andy McCormick, the Director of Development for DeBose Web Group out of Columbia, South Carolina. He runs operations and digs into front and back end code, solving problems for his clients and making it easier for them to run their sites. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Hello, how's it going?
Great, very good. Can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Yeah, so as you guys said, I'm Andy. I'm in Columbia, South Carolina. Currently just moved into Director of Operations for our company, DeBose Web. We're a team of 8 now. We just got a new person on board today and hopefully 9 by the end of the month. But I was Director of Development and responsible for all the code base there, all the sites that we do. We maintain about, I think right now it's about 75 to 80 active
wow.
clients, most on Expression Engine. And so mm-hmm. those are the ones that actively have support packages with us in some sort or some form. And so we just constantly are maintaining those while doing new projects. So yeah, so I got hired on to do backend development through different circumstances. They needed some help on the front end, and somehow I got suckered into doing that. And it just took off from there. So
did I hear you right? So you were Director of Development, but now you're Director of Operations?
Yeah. It's a company of 8 people now. So mm-hmm. those titles are pretty menial in what they actually mean. We're just kind of restructuring a little bit and abstracting myself out from the weeds of writing Expression Engine plugins and doing front-end code, and more towards looking at the systems of how we do things, the workflow, our processes.
Mm-hmm.
The way I explain myself to my clients is my job is to make sure everybody on the team has what they need to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
So just like we're talking about today with cloud and how we use that in our workflow and how we make sure everybody's equipped and can do what they need to do. Likewise, it's my job to make sure that design, their workflow is going well for them. If they have any questions, anything that's not working out, any communication issues with development or our account managers or anything's not being communicated well, they kind of come to me and I step in and start looking at, okay, what are we doing and how are we doing it and are we doing it the best way? So
cool. So how did you first get into the web?
So I think the first time I made a website was somewhere around 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And so back, there was no CSS or anything like that, just Notepad, and It actually really didn't click with me too well. I didn't understand why I was writing these H1 tags and P tags and stuff like that. And then I got fortunate enough that I convinced my parents to buy me NetObjects Fusion, which I'll never forget that name. It was kind of an old WYSIWYG website builder from Netscape back in the day.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was cool that I could draw circles on an image and hot link it to spots.
Right.
So I did like my church's youth group website, and they thought it was amazing. I hosted it on GeoCities.
Love it.
I think it was the Augusta community something. I probably could remember the URL if I thought about it. But yeah, and so I just kind of piddled around with it for a long time like that. Went to college, I actually have a degree in history and a minor in philosophy.
Hmm.
All this time, still piddling with the web, got into photography. I was a retoucher. I used to teach Photoshop. And then I started freelancing, retouching, and actually started doing web development for some of my clients. So I started working with photographers on building their websites, that kind of stuff. And said, I like that a lot better than just swapping heads and getting boogers out of kids' nose and pictures and that kind of stuff. So I hope I'm allowed to say boogers on the show. So I just took off from there and I said, I really like this. And I realized I really like the back end. I like the logic. I like the thought process. I like the database, the systems, more than just styling or making a pretty page. And so I said, back end's what I want to do. And so that's when I reached out and found DeBose Web, and it's just a great company to work for, really good for the family life, really good for being flexible in what we do and how we do it. And so that's pretty much where I've been.
Cool.
Very cool. Very cool. So let's dive into our topic. You actually reached out to us when South Carolina was hit with all those horrible floods, but your team was pretty much back to work the next day. So why don't you tell our listeners a bit more about that?
Yeah, just to preference that a little bit, I feel like this topic is kind of, I don't know if you guys used to watch Rocky and Bullwinkle, but how they used to have multiple titles for the same show. And so it's kind of disaster recovery or working on the cloud and not having to worry about disaster or being free to work from wherever you want to, So this whole thing is really more than just, how to recover from a disaster. And so what happened there was in 2015, in October, the weather guy said that it was going to rain. And on Saturday, it kind of misted. And we've never had floods like that in Columbia area. And so it kind of misted. And we were all like, yeah, whatever. Well, we woke up Saturday morning to businesses flooded out, cars, going down the road. Roads were collapsing all over the place. We have a lot of little ponds and all the dams were collapsing, all that kind of stuff. So for us, some places are a little bit more used to that. For us, it was like catastrophic.
Mm-hmm.
And our offices... We're actually a part of a family of five other companies, and one of those companies is a convention center, and our offices are kind of in the basement of that convention center. So we're in this low-lying area. Well, the boss traveled out. He got to the office, and of course, he called me right away and said, we've got water. And so we had about 18 inches of water in our offices.
Wow.
The elevator shaft, I think, had 10 feet of water in it, something like that. And so luckily, he knew some people and got a company out there to start pumping water out and drying Monday morning. But fortunately with us, just the way we're set up, and I guess we'll get into this more, is we were able to reach out to everybody through phone calls and text messages, and we use HipChat as our internal system. I know it's not cool anymore, but that's what we like to use. And so we were, first and foremost, obviously, is everybody okay? Are your families okay? Are you guys okay? What's going on? Everyone's like, yeah, we're fine. We're good. We all talked it out, made sure everyone's okay, got our bearings on what was going on. And obviously just stay home tomorrow. The roads were collapsing. Nobody could go out, that kind of stuff. But really that next day we were able to somewhat communicate through our tools and, collaborate, go through HipChat and different tools and, okay, what are we going to do for this week? How are we going to go about this? What do we need to take care of? All that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Tuesday we were able to get into our offices because the way everybody lives in the city, we were all away from the really deep stuff for the most part. So everyone's able to safely travel that could and get to the office. And we started cleaning up a little bit, started examining. We lost, I think, 10 computers. So all of us Windows people that had towers were on the floor and those were all gone. Mm-hmm. All the Mac people, they had those little Mac minis on their desk and they were okay. But we lost all of our Windows computers, which the majority of us used. And so we cleaned that all up and we brought our laptops and we just moved what we could upstairs to the convention center. And literally in big storage closets set up shop.
Mm.
And the cool thing was we were able to just open up our laptops, get on our Chrome browser, and we were pretty much back to work as if we were, as if it was another day.
Mm-hmm.
We were just cramped. We didn't have to worry about, what are we going to do about this? How are we going to do phones? How are we going to, where are our files at? Or is our server okay? We didn't have to reset up any dev environments. We didn't have to worry about anything. It was just open up our laptops and let's go. And then over the coming days, of course, we added, okay, well, let's get more screens up here. Let's get some better tables, let's get some stuff up here so we're not just working out of closets and just moved on. And so we were able to, within, that week, we were able to reach out to all of our clients, make sure they're okay. We're really big with our relationships with our clients. We're not about just building a website and letting it go. Obviously, with all those clients that we still actively maintain their site, So we reached out to a lot of clients, making sure they were okay. We were to check on them first, rather than clients having to call us and say, you know, hey, when can we start on this project? Right. Mm-hmm. We were upstairs for probably about a month and a half, I think, total. And again, we were just able to work from normal. We had clients come in and meet with us. We had we were working on support tickets, clients' websites. If they had any issues that week, we were able to immediately work on them. We didn't have to delay work at all for it. So really, it was just like work any other day for us. We were just in a different space. So that's kind of the quick version of it, I guess.
And so with this, what you've described, I mean, aside from the logistics of the office space and your physical hardware, you were able to do this because you had moved all of your tools, your services to the cloud. In the process of doing that, was that intentional because it offered this sort of disaster recovery option, or was it more a made business or financial sense? What was the reasoning to start moving all of those internal and external services to the cloud?
Yeah, so that was really interesting after all this happened. It was kind of in foresight that I saw, wow, look at what we did here. Look at what we were able to accomplish. Because when I came over, so originally our teams were really split up. The back end team, when I got hired, was in one corner. The front end team was in another corner. We kind of worked on different projects. I thought I was coming in to really build business intelligence solutions, stuff like that, not the website part of the business. Mm-hmm. So at that time, we really separated. So when I came to the front end, I kind of came into it and the front end really didn't have a good workflow. They weren't using a lot of the tools they had in place. They were using Dropbox, but it was just, yeah, maybe share that with Dropbox. It was more of a sharing tool than anything else. Mm-hmm. Yet we were paying all this money for almost an unlimited plan of Dropbox at the time. I forgot what the most we could have, but it was pretty much unlimited that we could have in there. And being a systems guy, even when I was in the photography world, that was one of my main things my own business was doing, was I was doing retouching and studio consulting. So photographers would talk to me about their workflow and I'd help them set up how to work on their business, that kind of stuff. And so I immediately started seeing, wow, we're paying for Dropbox, but we're not even really utilizing it. Mm-hmm. Wow, we have 10 licenses for Adobe Cloud. We don't even need that.
Wow.
How are we doing support tickets with all these websites? Well, we kind of email back and forth, you know, and I'd be on these emails that were, I'm sure we all got them, that are just 1,000 replies in one email chain and you have no clue who's doing what. All that kind of stuff. And so it was working, if you want to say that. I don't want to discount anything, but it just wasn't utilizing financial sense. It wasn't making sense as far as speed and efficiency goes. And so I said, hey, let's kind of compile what we've got as far as tool goes and start organizing it. So I started with Dropbox and said, okay, Dropbox is going to be our main server. Because with that, and I was thinking back, I always say hit by a bus is what I always say. You know, if everybody's get hit by a bus, what are we going to do? Or if this person gets hit by a bus, how are we going to account for that? So it was a case of, you know, if we lose this computer, what are we going to do with those files? How are we backing up those files? Well, let's back them up to Dropbox. And then it was like, well, why not just move Dropbox to basically become our NAS? You know, it's not really a local NAS, but it's a NAS. It's our central file storage. So if we're going to do that, the big thing that I think people miss when they start moving tools to the cloud is they don't plan enough. They don't think about repercussions. They don't think about accessing their data. They don't think about how are we going to do this to keep it from becoming spaghetti. And so that's really was for me. So, I mean, I got together and said, okay, here's a plan. How about we organize our files like this? You always put stuff here. Each client will do this. This is where we organize this. This is what goes in Dropbox. This is what doesn't go in Dropbox. This is where I want you to store all your personal stuff. So even for each individual user, everybody has what we call a scratch folder in Dropbox so they can just store their normal stuff. So realistically, nobody should have on their computer anything that the rest of the team needs that's not in Dropbox. The machines we use are really dummy terminals for most of us. And so it was kind of that. It was like this whole, well, let's get organized. Let's start planning this out. We're paying for this. Why aren't we using it this way? And so naturally for me, it was, well, everything's moving to this mysterious thing called the cloud. And I almost don't like calling it the cloud, but that's really what you call it. So it's this the cloud, you know? And so, you know, everyone makes fun of me when I start talking about the cloud, but it's just what it's called, you know? And so we started using like Jira. We bought onto the Atlassian, started drinking the Atlassian Kool-Aid. And so we use HipChat and Jira and Confluence and Bitbucket and all that connects together. And that's what I started looking at was, how can we use services that connect together that are easiest for us, that we can establish a constant workflow. We can automate as much as we possible. They call me Automation Andy because anything I can automate, I'm going to automate. All those kind of pieces, rather than just saying, oh, wow, that looks pretty. Or, mm-hmm. oh, wow, that looks cool. Or, oh, I saw this on Twitter yesterday. Let me try this service. It was really a lot of planning and thinking about how does this work best for our workflow. And mm-hmm. so talking to the team, and I may be getting ahead of ourselves, but talking to the team about what do you need and how do you want to use it, that kind of stuff. So that's really where it all came from. It didn't really stem from a we need disaster recovery. It stemmed from what's best for the team and what's best for our workflow. And then it became, wow, if we do this, we can access our data anywhere we go.
Regardless of what the situation is.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So, Andy, you sort of alluded to it in your response to our last question, but you said it yourself, the cloud. Could you define that a little bit instead of, you know, using that catch-all term? One of the things that Leigh and I are trying to do is kind of demystify techie terms. So how would you explain the cloud to someone, even, you know, maybe a front-end dev on your team who wasn't even using cloud services in a real formal way? How did you explain that?
That's a better way of saying it than can you define the cloud, because I cannot define the cloud. You know, I have no clue what the cloud is. It's probably some guy's computer in his mom's basement that I'm sending all my data to. It's two main things to me. It's either software as a service or platforms as a service. Mm. So you've got stuff like Dropbox, where Dropbox is storing it on their servers and they're backing it up. They're doing all the stuff that they need to take care of on their end. We're not doing it locally. And then you've got tools like Jira or HipChat or those kind of things that are actual applications that you're using that you go through a browser and you jump on. And again, it's not some internal server that you're running an instant messaging service on. It's all handled remotely. So for me, the most rudimentary definition of it to me is it's external to our building, to our team. It's storing it somewhere else. It's maintained by other people. It's, yeah, you know, I mean, there's not really a super clear definition to it, but it's external to our network. And so it can be as big or as small as you want. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that last point actually is a perfect point that I've also built upon when I used to have to do some writing for a client and they did a lot of cloud stuff. So they were always writing about the cloud. And it's that as big or as small as you want aspect that I think is interesting. It's like you said, software as a service, platform as a service. So you're not just buying a piece of software and that's it. You're buying software for a period of time that suits what your needs are. So you could, for example, with the Dropbox, you're paying what, I guess for me, I'm paying like an annual fee. I guess you could also go monthly and you pick what level you want, how much you want. You can go down, you could go up at any point in time.
Right. Yeah. Scalability is a big thing too with the cloud. So it's very scalable. If we want to, like you said, increase our package with one of these, it's usually just paying more money and mm-hmm. everything's done. Right. We don't have to get a bigger, faster server. We don't have to install new software. You just pay for it and boom, there it is. So.
Right. So there's no physical limitations literally in front of you, right? Like if your computer only has so much hard drive space, that's the end of it. But if you have certain things on the cloud, you can just keep adding or removing as necessary.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm curious about the process that got you to choose all those automations and integrations and the discussions. So can you tell us a little bit more about the discussions and how you chose what tools should be moved to the cloud and what services you needed to use?
Yeah, sure. And this is actually what I talked about at the Expression Engine conference last year. How do I say this? It really comes down to the same process I think people should use for any tool. And unfortunately, people don't. But I'm really big on planning and evaluating and, again, thinking about the consequences before I move on a tool. Mm-hmm, right. Whether it's in the cloud or whether it's something local, it's a fat client on my machine, it's a new workflow that we're talking about, it's anything, sometimes to a fault. So for me, it's all about evaluating, planning, and then communicating and documenting. Those are kind of my four steps that I usually use. So first of all, it's evaluating the need. It's evaluating from your team, what troubles are they having? You talk to your team and they're like, well, first and foremost, Andy, when I first came over, it was about that Dropbox. It was about, we don't know where files are. Mm-hmm. This guy has files over here. She has files over there. We have files over here. Nobody's storing files in the same place. And so then it mm-hmm. was, okay, so we need to figure out some way to centralize our file storage. We've got Dropbox. We've got this NAS that's sitting over in the client over here, or in the closet over here. We've got these different pieces. What's the best way to do this? Okay, so what do you guys need to do with the data? Well, we need to know where it's at. We need to be able to share it with our clients. I'd like to be able to access the data on my phone. I'd like to be able to access these files from my mom's house. I'd like to be able to do it here. all this kind of stuff like that starts these conversations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so then I said, well, what's the best way to do that? Okay, well, this NAS, it's one of those Synology NASs, and it's, you know, well, it's got sharing tools on it. It's got this, but you know, if the power goes out, we can't access the data.
Right.
You know, if this happens, what are we going to do about that? So that seems like okay, but it's not the best. We pay for Google Apps. What about Google Drive? Well, it's kind of, I don't like the file structure. I don't like how you access files, you know, this and this. Well, what about Dropbox? We're paying for this huge Dropbox plan. We've got terabytes of data we can put in there. We can share it with anybody. We can access it from almost any device anywhere we go. That seems like a really good solution,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so it's evaluating that new tool or that the need. It's evaluating the tool itself. Hey, what about this? What about recovery from Dropbox? Oh, wow. You know, at the time, they just changed this, unfortunately, but it used to be almost unlimited recoveries with our business plan. Mm-hmm. And so we could recover stuff that we deleted a year ago out of our Dropbox. And that was, you know, I mean, that's a ringer right there. That's awesome. And so it really, Dropbox just fit all those pictures. And so we started planning it out. So then it was, once we evaluated, then it was planning how we're going to use the tool. Okay, well, to do this, we want to structure it. We want to make sure everybody knows where things are. We want to set rules. So we actually set rules and said, you can do this with Dropbox. You cannot do this with Dropbox.
Mm.
We didn't want people syncing their personal Dropboxes to our computers. You know, it just eats up bandwidth. It eats up space. It introduces other scenarios that we don't want to deal with. So we said, you can't sync your local or your personal Dropbox with the machines.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started planning out how that's going to happen. And so then once we did that, we communicated to the team and said, all right, team, this is what we're doing. This is how it's going to roll out. This is what it's going to look like. This is how we want you to use it. We're going to have accountability. So we'll check your Dropbox every once in a while, make sure everyone's kind of structuring it correctly. That sounds a little police-ish. And we don't really, it's not like we're over your shoulder, you know, submit your monthly audit of your Dropbox. But every once in a while, if somebody shares something, or as the admin, I can look into people's Dropbox and I see, wow, this is like spaghetti code, you know, for Dropbox. I kind of step in and say, guys, we really need to work on this. This is for the sake of everybody. This is our client stuff. They trust us with their data. They trust us with what they send us. They trust us that we can respond to their questions quickly. We need to make sure this stays organized.
Mm-hmm.
And so once we do that, then the big part that nobody likes to do is the documenting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important. We use Confluence kind of for our internal wiki, but to document, this is why the decision was made. This is how we're doing it. This is how we rolled it out. And this is kind of the guidelines for everybody to use the tool. And so it's not a quick overnight, let's just use Dropbox, yay. You know, it really was, you know, several weeks, if not a month, for some of these tools mm-hmm. to evaluate, plan. And so when it rolls out to the team, this is how we're going to do it.
And that kind of process, I think, applies. I've worked in organizations with really large teams, and that's necessary. But even between Leia and myself,
mm-hmm.
that's been really important. In fact, the point you said, not policing, but checking in, like that keeps showing up on my list and I keep delaying it. But I right. know I need to go back in because over time we stop following the rules. We
right.
just do. And it
sure.
does
sure.
get messy. And you're absolutely right. It's important because us keeping everything documented according to the rules we already decided supports our clients. It supports our workflow. And it's just natural. Sometimes you're like, oh, I'll just quickly save this here real quick like this instead of how it should be done.
Right, right. And I would have to say too, like Emily said, we're a small team. It's just the two of us and we also have a digital assistant. Just taking the time, every time you do something new and just document it. Just mm-hmm. do that
yes,
because
yes, yes.
even if you do it like every day, for example, Emily and I are always pulling and pushing things into Beanstalk and doing and setting up new environments and all those kind of things. Not like at this point, I can do it in my sleep. But once in a while, you forget because you're human or you're tired or something. And just having a document out there was like, oh, that's why this isn't working.
Right. I forgot that little step.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. And because it's written down, then, you know, it's not a big deal. And, you know, the other thing too is say someone is sick or someone is on vacation, then another person on the team can simply look through the documentation and go through the steps.
Yeah. And I think in your documenting, one, like you were saying, just get something on paper or electronically. Just like when we develop, you know, kind of the first thing I do when I start to write something out is I just pseudocode it out in comments
mm-hmm.
and say, first, I'm going to do this. Then I'm going to check this. Then at least do something like that. But for me, it's also about documenting the why we're doing it, not just how we do it. So I don't know if you've ever read Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why, which is really about start with why as far as why are you doing stuff in your business? all that kind of stuff, because it really drives your decisions. And that's a whole another topic, a really good one. But for me, even in the tools and how we do stuff at work, even from an operations point of view, it's why are we doing this? Why did we choose Dropbox? So that when I get hit by a bus or something happens and somebody else comes in and takes my spot, they don't just come in and say, all right, team, we're going to use Google Drive today.
Right.
Yeah. We can do the same stuff. It's fine. But it's really going back and saying, no, we're not, because really the reason we did this was because of this. And it also helps evaluate if you need to change your tools later on, because it's saying, here's why. Well, we don't really need that anymore. That's not the why of our business anymore. We're doing stuff differently. So now we can clearly say, okay, let's go to this other tool because of X, Y, Z or something. So
Your why is almost your needs.
Right.
You know, you've already documented. I think what's really nice about the process you're sharing that you went through for your team, it's so much like going through discovery with a client. You know, asking them, you know, starting those conversations so that you discover, oh, someone wants to do something when they're at their mom's house and it's a totally different time zone and all this other stuff. Just those little things that come up that really flesh out the needs from a real perspective, from the people who are going to be using it.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. I really like the emphasis on the why, even with somebody else's, you know, you leave or someone else is added to the team, that it's really clear, because a lot of these cloud services have overlapping features, right?
So like, yeah, very much so.
For example, with Dropbox, you can annotate documents, but you could also do that with Google Drive Docs, right? So it's like, okay, then which one are you going to use? Are you going to annotate? Are you going to make, quote, physical documents? I don't know if it's really even the term for digital things, but like, let's say you'd save, is it makes more sense to save a Word document and then you annotate stuff on Dropbox? Or would it be better to use Atlassian or some other graphic design service to annotate a comp and on and on and on, so on and so forth? And the problem, I think, with teams, even with Emily and I, we have to like really figure out, okay, if I'm going to give feedback on this thing, we're going to use this particular way to explain why this decision was made, or are we just going to use text, you know, those types of things. But then we have to explain, this is the reason why we did that, so we're not going to use the other feature that exists in this tool.
Yes. Yes. That's very important, especially with the cloud, because like you said, so much stuff overlaps and it's pretty daunting. And then sometimes the team will get away. All of a sudden somebody says, oh, I put that here. And I'm like, why did you do? Well, it said I could store this document along with this, but we store our documents in Dropbox. You know, why did you do that?
Right.
And so you've got to set those rules. You know, one of these services, it'll one day be your project management. Then it's going to say, no, store your files here as well. And by the way, you can also store all your secure credit cards in our database or something like, you know, it's just, they just keep on adding stuff. And you've really got to, again, plan, evaluate, and make sure everybody knows why you're using certain tools for certain reasons.
Yeah, and keeping that accountability in place is also so important for just security too.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit. We've talked, use Dropbox as a really good example for how it applied to your team, but do you mind sharing what some of the other tools and services you are using that are cloud-based and what you're using them for?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty much all things. Other than our designers have a few things, obviously, with Photoshop and those kind of programs that aren't cloud-based. But everything else is pretty much cloud-based. So for, like I said, Atlassian, we love Bitbucket, HipChat, Jira, Confluence for our wiki. Jira is our project management. We also use a tool called Smartsheet. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Mm-mm.
And so Smartsheet we kind of use for a lot of things, but mainly for an overview of the project management. So we kind of plan out our projects in Smartsheet, and then we use Jira to execute them. So I don't use Jira, even though it advertises itself as a project management tool. I don't use it for reporting or for running the project. For me, Jira is about getting things done. It's about creating the tickets, putting them through the workflow. We can, when we push to Bitbucket, it connects it to the Jira ticket, so we can easily go into a Jira ticket when a site breaks, and I can say, okay, well, it broke when we resolved this ticket. Here is the commit that we pushed. Oh, yep, I see the code that was changed. He thought he was changing this, and it actually changed these other 20 things. Mm-hmm. Let's revert back and try that again. And so really connecting those dots through there. And Jira to me is all about getting things done. Smartsheet's about running the project. LastPass is huge for us. I know there's a variety of different password storages out there. LastPass we like for the enterprise part of it too, that we can have groups and teams and limit permissions and work with external parties as well. And so LastPass is really key to us. That's the two things we really need to execute our workflow. is we need a browser, preferably Google Chrome, and LastPass. You log into LastPass, and those are the keys to the kingdom, because then you can just log into all your other cloud-based accounts and get into all the tools that you need.
And so just to clarify for our listeners, LastPass is just like a password storage and sharing system, similar to like 1Password.
Yep, exactly.
And you mentioned you use Smartsheet for the planning of your project management. Is that like high-level internal stuff, or is that something you're also using with clients?
That's what we're currently using with clients as well. That's one thing that we haven't quite landed on as far as sharing the, I guess, the project planning or the project execution with the client. It's still a little bit of a black box for them, which I don't like. But tools, I know some people share Basecamp or other things, and they actually share that with their client. For us, that just hasn't been the best for the clients that we deal with. Smartsheet has been really good, because even though it's really just a glorified spreadsheet, you can also save attachments per row and comment on rows and that kind of stuff as well. And we can limit what they see in there. So we'll have a version of the project that we do share with the client, and we'll show them how to upload their content, you know, to each row to match the page or whatever that we need the content for. We don't, and so really, if we need anything from the client, that's where we do that if we share that. It allows us to share it with them. It allows us to turn features on and off. We can customize the project design as much as we need it to. But really, in the end, it's just a glorified spreadsheet. Other than that, Dropbox, they share most of their content through Dropbox with us.
Okay.
So when we were at Piers in Seattle a couple of weeks ago, you were talking about how not only are you, you know, managing people and documents through the cloud, you're actually developing on the cloud.
Yes.
You don't actually have any local systems, which is, I think, startling for a few developers. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So how much time do we have left in the show? This is the part, you know, being a developer that I'm really excited about. And I don't think a lot of people are utilizing this as much as I think they could. It's kind of confusing. It's kind of, people don't really get it right off the bat. It's not really till you're in there doing it. But we use a service called Cloud9. So Cloud9 is kind of a platform as a service, but they also have software as a service as well, in a sense. There's a couple different parts to Cloud9. So a lot of people are really familiar with all these online editors that are popping up. So you can go to Code Anywhere. CodePen was kind of growing into a bigger one, but really that's kind of the idea that a lot of people are familiar with. You can have a pen, you go in there and develop, you can import JavaScript, you can run everything and see it right there in your browser what's going to happen. You don't have to have any kind of development space. And so we're seeing a lot of those pop up across the space. So what happened with me was, even when I was by myself developing before I started working at DeBose, when I first discovered WAMP, because I was on a Windows machine, I wanted to know how could I put WAMP into Dropbox so that I could access it on multiple computers. I didn't want to have to constantly copy, you know, my settings from one to the other or do this or that. And so I've always been like that. Even when FileZilla and FTP a long time ago, I was trying to get my settings saved in Dropbox securely so that any time I installed FileZilla, I didn't have to re-import my settings. I've just always been like that. And so one other thing is, like I said, we do a lot of expression engine sites, and I was doing WordPress at the time, but it's the whole database aspect of things. A lot of developers, it's easy with the code base. Hey, let's just commit it to Git. All right, you know, I'll put mine to the upstream. You can pull it down, merge it in with yours, all that kind of stuff. That can be incredibly confusing for some. For some, it's just second nature, but that can be a pain in itself. But then also, right, when you add the database in there, it's... you've got a version of the database. I've got a version of the database. She's got a version of the database. So when you're doing CMS development, you know, well, I added these fields. I added this content. Well, pull it down. Oh, man. You know, well, the expression engine database, it named my field with an ID of 35, and it also named yours ID of 35. And so now we've got a database conflict. So, you know, you can write scripts to kind of do database merges. They can be painful. I just haven't seen one that's perfect yet. I've used tools like Toad for MySQL, which will allow you to line by line resolve conflicts. So you're going to take an hour just to merge databases. You know, it's just, it's not worth it. There has to be a better way. And so what I started thinking about was, well, why, what if we all develop on the same database? Okay, well, let's kind of all just point our own code bases to the database. Well, that kind of worked, but it's really slow, and still you run into issues with people having different versions of the files, that kind of stuff. And so then I said, well, why don't we develop directly on the server? And so I came across a couple editors that you could actually install on your server. I think the first one I found was Ice Editor or something. And so what you do is through Node, you install this on your server, and then you can go to a port. So you go to like your server port 8085 or some whatever the port number is, and you log in, and it's actually an interface. It's a code editor for you to edit the files directly on your server. So if you want to think about like a graphical interface for Vim or something like that almost, where you're editing the files directly on your server. It's not a temp version. It's not anything like that.
And does it do like a checkout? Like if someone starts editing a file, it checks it out so someone else can't use
it? No. And so that's the cool thing, especially with Cloud 9. And that's why we discovered Cloud 9, which has really taken this to a new level, where you can install their Cloud 9 editor on your server and you go through the Cloud 9 service to connect in. And if I'm in a file and you jump in the file, then you're collaboratively editing the file together.
Oh, you can see the other person even?
Yeah. So just like Google Docs, where you see the other person type, I can see the other person writing code right there, which is amazing because we have contractors in other states that we use for extra horsepower. And so they're on there and we're talking back and forth and we don't have to do a screen share or anything. I just say, what file are you in? They say, well, I'm in the, you know, the main.scss file. I jump in there. I can tell Cloud9, show me exactly where they're at. It'll take me to the line they're editing. And I can see what they're typing. And we can type back and forth. And, oh, well, let me try this. Oh, what about this? What about that?
Cool.
All that kind of stuff. And so I can see really easily. It does run into some issues where you don't want to step on each other's toes. But that goes back to just making sure you have processes and communication in place.
Right.
And so if something's going really funny with the, you know, I load the site up and all the styling is broken. And I'm like, what's going on? Oh, well, you know, Brock, who's one of our front-end developers, oh, he's in the SAS file and he's messing up some stuff, you know? And so I can go in there and see exactly what he's doing and working on it. And we can talk and say, okay, well, let me know when you're done with this piece because I need to work on this or something.
That's interesting.
So a lot of times you mentioned the local host. There are no, and I'm probably talking fast right now because I get excited about this. But, so we have no local host. I think
that's blowing my mind.
Yeah. And it's great, too. I mean, there's no WAMP, there's no MAMP, there's no XAMPP, there's no Vagrant. There's none of that. I was trying to think of Kim Creighton.
Yeah.
One thing that she talked about with mentoring junior devs is, in so many words, she said, stop lying to them, telling them it's easy to set up a development environment. Because it's not. It never is. And it doesn't matter what tool you use. It may be great for you because you're all knowing. But if you bring somebody else into your team, and sometimes we'll have four developers working on a project, it's not perfect for everybody. Mm-hmm. And even the other day, somebody was using Vagrant to develop a site for us. And I'm like, that's great. That's wonderful. And so I was like, hey, yeah, I'm ready to try Vagrant. Let me throw it up here. Oh, well, I don't have this dependency. Okay, well, let me get that. Oh, I don't have this. Oh, this setting's messed up on my computer. Oh, what's going on here? And so it's not that easy to set up dev environments. It's just not. And so all these ones like Vagrant or different ways of with virtual machines of trying to share, it's still not as easy as I just fire up Chrome, go to Cloud9, and I'm in the server.
Right.
And so a lot of times you develop on localhost and then you'll push to Git. You'll have some, you guys said Beanstalk, you'll have some deployment hook that's going to push that to your development server. So then you can see a client or other team members can see the site at dev.sitename.whatever.com. Well, with us, we are automatic. We're always actually writing code on that domain. So when I press save, it's updating dev.whatever.com, you know? So the dev site is automatically updated or is updated because we're editing those files directly. It's almost like FTP, the cowboy coding, except for we also have Git. We also have everything because we're on, you have a full command line. You're just SSH'd into the server.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, this is tied to your Bitbucket, your version control?
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, all we're doing is we have dev servers that are just Cloud9 droplets or DigitalOcean droplets. And so it's a full machine. It's just like a machine you would host a website on, which is another cool thing is when we develop, we're actually developing on the exact stack where we would host sites because our development environments are copies of the production environments. So we don't have to worry about, oh, well, this is this version of Apache or this is this version of PHP. Mm-hmm. We're developing directly on the same stack. And so they are, so when we, what was your question?
Well, just about the version control. So you still are able to have that when you guys are editing the files directly in your development server?
Right. So these are Ubuntu machines. So they're Linux. And so it's just a headless server, right? So we don't have a browser. We don't have anything like that. We don't have a graphical interface. So just like you would SSH into a terminal, that's exactly what we're doing here, except for Cloud9 provides us an interface to use. So the way Cloud9 is kind of set up, on your left, you have your files and folders, just like your normal directory tree. So rather than CD, home, Debose, development, this site, I just go over there and click on the folder I want to access. And I can open the files in their editor. Or I can right click and say, hey, open terminal here. And I get my normal command line right there to do any command line stuff I want. So since we don't have a UI, we don't have stuff like if you're on a Mac, we can't use Tower or that kind of stuff. All the tools that we get are command line tools. So our Git is all command line, Gulp's all command line, all that kind of stuff is all through the command line, which is really good because we actually get to learn what we're doing rather than just pressing a button and not really knowing the magic behind it. So, yeah.
Cool.
So we've been talking a lot about all the positive stuff in the cloud and all the cool things that should be in the cloud that you believe should be in the cloud. Are there any tools or processes or things that should never be in the cloud?
That's a tough one to answer, I think. Again, if you're planning, if you're thinking things out, I think pretty much everything could go into the cloud. So again, I mean, even secured stuff, if you have something that's super secured, then there's services out there that will host that and allow you to access that data from different locations using different methods. So security is always an issue, and that's why you want to evaluate the tools that you're using. You want to read reviews. You want to look as deep into them, find any issues you can find with it before you start putting secure data up there. So I think even secure data can go in the cloud. But of course, never put secured stuff just in Dropbox, not secured. You know, I mean, it's got some security on there, but if it's some, you know, nuclear codes to your office or something like that, then, you know, you don't want that to go in there. So just think about what you're doing before you do it.
When you do these, you know, evaluations, when you decide to roll them out, are you doing them in to start small, like to sort of test out whether you find any things that may be problematic before it's everywhere and everyone's using it?
Yeah, of course. So you always want to go with a service that has a trial, hopefully. Sometimes you have to go with reviews if it just seems like the magical tool. You just basically pay for your trial. But you always want to trial it out and you always want to push it to its limits. I always try to ask questions. So I try to find the community, if there's a community, and ask questions on there just to see how responsive is the community. I try to email the company to see how responsive support is. You know, even if I know the answer to it, sometimes I try to make up questions just to see how responsive they are and what kind of support I'm going to get from this company before I do it. I try to always ask for an extended trial. So when my trial runs out, again, that just helps me understand how willing is this company to help us. Because if we're trusting them with our data, I want to know that they're there to help us. They want our business. They want to help our business. That kind of stuff. So I try to do as much as I can to explore all that before I even move on with the service.
Right. So I'm a little bit curious about one of the things that you're thinking about when you started to move things to the cloud was some of the way things were being used were not financially prudent. But the thing that I feel like when I talk to my other colleagues and even myself is I'm getting a little bit of service exhaustion in terms of, okay, that's another $20 a month, another $20 a month on its face, like maybe $20 to $50 a month, especially if it's a really necessary service, isn't that big of a deal, but then it starts adding up. Can you explain how you helped evaluate whether this was actually going to help you make money or save you money? And additionally, would you be comfortable sharing what Debose Web generally spends on a monthly basis on these cloud services?
Yeah. So as far as the financial aspect of it, essentially, I look at, we went through a 1,000-year flood and we're up and running in a few days. You know, I mean, for me, that's every time we look at it, we're like, man, is it worth it? Well, look at all this that we're getting from it. And it is. It's more expensive because we're not buying this software outright. I think the Atlassian products, you know, you can buy and host on your own server. But then we look at, okay, well, if we bought them, that's approximately 3 years of the cloud, but we also have to develop it ourselves. We have to host it on our own servers. We have to make sure they're up and running. Look at this. How much is that really going to cost us versus just paying them? We also always have the latest version of it. If there's bug fixes, bugs get, you know, pushed to the cloud versions a lot faster than they do for you to run an update on your server of your local hosted version of it.
Right.
So cost does come into play, but we also want to make sure that everybody has the tools that they need. So we just kind of balance it all out. Just like everything else, I'm overly process everything, you know, as far as evaluating what are the consequences, what's this, what's that. And of course, you know, we look at our forecast. Do we have the money? What, how's this going to impact our, you know, our 3-year plan? How's it going to impact this year? How's it going to impact payroll? We have mouths to feed. That's way more important than having the newest, coolest tool in the cloud.
As a small business owner, you know, a lot of those pros that you just described really resonate with me. Those are the reasons why I feel these services have value. But it also goes back to the scaling thing. You know, a few years back, we had a rough year. It's very easy for us to scale back some of these services just to cut expenses a little bit and just manage things a little tight, more tight than we, would need to. And I think that is also really valuable. We're not letting go of something. We're just adjusting what we need from it for a period of time.
Yeah, that's huge. And like I said, we work with contractors that are outside of our team. And so with Jira, you kind of pay for tier users. And so we might decide right now, hey, we're doing good. We really need this extra horsepower. Let's go ahead and pay for some of our contractors to be on our Jira team so they can access the tool directly.
Right.
But then in times when we're saying, hey, we need to scale back, we can say, let's go down a tier and we won't have that flexibility that they can access it and we need to get the data to them some other way. So we'll export out of Jira, put it into Smartsheet, and then they can see it in Smartsheet. Or there's tools that connect Jira to Smartsheet, that kind of stuff as well. So you can constantly adjust and modify as you need.
I'm curious, have you had any concerns having so many cloud-based, which essentially means you're web-based, services, and then kind of these ransomware attacks or the rolling outages that affected, the East Coast, like a couple months back? Do you have any concerns about those compromising these critical services that your business relies on?
I mean, I would be almost stupid to say no, not at all, because again, I want to think about the consequences of what we're doing. A couple things. Number one, I want to use, and that's why we'll pay more for certain tools if we need to, is I want to use a service that I can trust. So I want to use a service that even if they go down, they have it backed up, or they're using other services to back up my data, that kind of stuff. I want to have copies of the data. One of the things I go through when I evaluate is how easy is it to get my data out of this system and either have it as a backup or port it to another system.
Right.
So how do we export data out of here? What do we do with that? And so we try to also have local backups with stuff as well. So for instance, Dropbox, we actually run scripts that download our most important Dropbox stuff to our local NAS. So rather than, kind of funny because typically, you know, it's your NAS and then Dropbox backs up your NAS or you send it to AWS or something. We do it the opposite. You know, Dropbox is our main storage and then we have scripts that actually pull down to our NAS to back that up. Confluence, you can run, they have Confluence CLI. So you can run scripts through the command line that will basically export PDFs of all of our wiki entries. And so we can have PDF backups of the stuff in Confluence. It's not perfect. It's not ideal as, you know, just being able to say, hey, well, now I wanted to use Dropbox paper and automatically move things over. It's not that easy, but you can get your data out of there. And as far as outages are awesome. We have a game room with foosball and arcade basketball and dart boards. And so if the internet goes out for a few minutes, you know, it's playtime. And that's what I try to tell everybody because they're like, man, what do you do if you don't have Wi-Fi? And I'm like, I relax. I enjoy my life. You know, typically I have my phone. Like I said, right now, my phone is, you know, I'm waiting for my new phone to come in today. But typically I have Wi-Fi wherever I go with my phone. I mean, I have Wi-Fi at McDonald's. I went to get my oil changed and there's Wi-Fi in Meineke the other day. You know, you don't believe me sometimes, but I went into Best Buy to fix server issues before because all I did was go into Best Buy. I got on Google Chrome. I logged into Cloud9 and I SSH into the server and I'm working on the servers. And I don't have to worry about IP restrictions, all that kind of stuff, because our dev servers, if I access everything from the command line on our dev servers, it's always the same IP addresses. We don't have to worry about, oh, well, I'm not in the firewall or anything. Right now, I'm at my parents' house. My wife took off on a girls' trip to New York City, so I came to my parents' house in Tennessee so they could help me take care of my boys. And, I mean, I've been working from my laptop in the living room for the last week. I worked on their computer. It doesn't matter that they have an older computer. I just need a browser. And if I just don't have access, then I just relax. I just enjoy life. I go play catch with my kids or whatever I want to do. Because that's the converse side of everything in the cloud, is you can access it anywhere. And you can overwork yourself. And you can forget that I need to check out a little bit. So really, outages, all that kind of stuff, that's awesome. They're awesome because I know we have our most important stuff that is crucial, that is that more that disaster recovery, we have that stuff backed up in multiple locations. It's not a, if this service goes down, we're out of the water. it might disrupt our workflow a little bit. It might not be as pretty as it was after the flood that time, but we can survive and we can move on. So mm-hmm.
Very cool. So we're nearing the end here. What's your final advice for other agencies working off the cloud?
I mean, really, we've already said it, and that's planning and evaluating and especially documenting. Mm-hmm. Don't get suckered into the latest, coolest tool on Twitter. And right. Don't get suckered into, because this service that you use says, now they'll also make cookies for you, that you get cookies from there. You know, because developers aren't the best cooks. You know what I'm saying? But it's just don't get suckered into all the pretty flashy stuff, because a lot of these services are going to start offering the same thing. Mm-hmm. And you've got to really evaluate. You really got to take this time to say, why am I going to go with the service? What do I want out of it? What are we going to accomplish? How are we going to use it? Document that down so you can constantly go through it. Just like you were saying with strategy of our websites. Whenever we work with a client, we want to document the why of their website. Why are you guys doing this? Why is this feature on your site? So that later on, when somebody else comes into that company, they get a new marketing person and they say they want to do all this other stuff, we just go back to the document and say, well, I know that looks cool, but the reason that we did it like this was because of this and this and this and this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they can say, oh, yeah, let's continue doing that instead. That's a much better idea. Right. And so the same thing with our tools. We can go back and say, this is why we're doing this. I know that looks cool. I know it looks like it's $5 cheaper a month. I know that they say they can do this. But can it do all this other stuff that was our needs, that was the why that we chose to go with this other service?
Right.
And so that's the biggest thing, is just don't get attracted by all the shiny things out there.
And would you have any suggestions for someone who specifically wants to take this sort of approach of disaster planning, having an option for recovery? What do you think is the first step that they should take?
So the first step for disaster recovery.
Or just like planning for disaster recovery.
Yeah. You know, and the funny thing is like, I'm like, man, I don't even really have to plan for that so much anymore. But obviously make sure that you back up, you know, that you're backing up somewhere. The general disaster relief stuff, I think Andrew Welch responded to one of your things on Twitter with a great thing for backing up websites. And I think that goes for a lot of your tools as well, or a lot of data that you have internally. Which is, you know, kind of back up internally, kind of have a local backup that you have. Don't let your local machine be the only record with it. Have a local NAS or something, but then also use an external service. And if you use something like Amazon, AWS, those things, you can have them backed up to multiple locations. So really, it's just having your data backed up to more than one location. So if there is an outage in your city, you know, and you can't access your office and you lost your local server and your desktop, then you still have it on AWS somewhere. Or if the East Coast goes out, you still have it in Seattle data center or something like that. That's the biggest thing, is just distribute your data and document where it's at. Make sure you know what services you're using. I'm going to say that again, but make sure you know what services you're using and where your data is at. And a big key is to practice that recovery. So to practice, okay, we just lost Confluence. What data are we missing right now? Nobody can access Confluence today. How are you going to get this data? Where is it at? What's going on? So the same thing with websites. Typical disaster recovery 101 is, if you have something in plan, if you have rollover servers, if you have whatever you have set up, then turn that other server off. One night at midnight, you know, probably get your client's approval, but you know, one night at midnight, just have a test and turn off that server and see if everything rolls over like it's supposed to happen.
I'm curious, is this part of like your maintenance contracts with these 75 plus sites? Do you guys go, okay, we're going to do a fire alarm kind of test situation?
Yeah, so that gets into a little bit more of the backing up and the actual, you know, how do we do maintenance on the sites? So yes, so different people pay for different levels of protection, if you will. All of our clients in general, just because it's our, that's one of the cool things about working with us. Any clients, if you're listening, it's awesome to work with us because we do this naturally for you. You know, we have all this stuff in the cloud. So we're naturally thinking in that mindset. It's not another step we have to take. So your stuff's automatically in Git, which, just to the world, I'm sorry to disappoint people, but Git is not a backup solution. It can help out with that and be kind of a step in there, but it's not a backup solution. We have your stuff in Git and version control. We have your stuff on multiple servers. All that stuff just comes naturally. But then we also have clients who pay extra for stuff like load balancing or mirroring between different servers, where it'll send traffic to this server or that server. Or if one gets a DDoS attack, then it automatically switches all the traffic to this other service or shuts it down or that kind of stuff. It allows us, with DigitalOcean, what we can do is we use what's called a floating IP. I don't know if you're familiar with that. But it gives us an IP address that we put in the DNS for our client But then internally to DigitalOcean, we can point that to whatever DigitalOcean droplet we want to. So what we do is if we're updating Ubuntu or we're updating Apache or PHP, we just spin up another server in DigitalOcean. We run all the tests. We run all the Apache updates. We run everything, make sure it went okay. And then what we do is just switch their floating IP to point to that server now.
Cool.
And turn off the old server and just destroy the old server. And the client never has to change DNS. It's zero downtime. We get to test everything thoroughly before we ever move their site there. And so that kind of stuff, you know, it's just according to what level they're paying for.
Right.
It's according to how much of that we set up for them and how much we just, we have on the ready. Like it's kind of in the bullpen that we can do this for you, or it's just constantly being load balanced or constantly having multiple servers running, that kind of stuff. So
interesting.
That was a long answer to a short question. But there you go.
Oh, but it's so fascinating. Definitely. I'm sure we can continue talking about all of this on and on, but that is all the time we have for today. But before we finish up, we've got our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Are you ready?
I think so.
All right. First question, introvert or extrovert?
I'm pretty much an introvert until you get to know me or you talk about the cloud and then I become an extrovert. So.
Oh, this is a good question for this episode. So the power is going to be out for the next week.
Yes.
What food from the fridge do you eat first?
It's got to be the ice cream.
Yeah.
It's got to be the ice cream. Yeah.
What's your favorite website for fun?
Slick Deals.
Oh, what's that?
What's Slick Deals?
Yeah.
It's like a website where you go and all these people from the internet post deals in different places.
Oh.
So it could be Walmart, it could be Amazon. And so the other day, there was an item at Walmart. I do camping with my boys a lot. And they had those cots that you can camp on, like for beds. Mm-hmm. And they're typically $75. Walmart had them for $45, but then for some reason there was an in-store discount of if you picked it up in-store, you got $35 off.
Wow.
And so I got these $75 cots for $6 a piece, which I don't know if that math adds up, but that's about what it was. It was like $6.50 or $7 a
nice.
Piece. And yeah, what it is people just find these deals online and they're browsing, or some people, that's all they do. And then they post it on there. So you get the hottest deals on the internet. And so I get stuff, you know, chargers for a dollar, or this place has this super rebate and you get it for free. And I'm just a sucker for that. I'm a sucker for getting a really good deal. And
I love saving money too. I'm going to have to check that out.
It's great. It's addicting.
All right. So what's the last thing you read?
The last thing I read was probably a book on orphan care. So doing a lot of like small booklets and stuff on orphan and foster care and caring for the neglected children out there. So I'm starting a ministry at my church on kind of changing the culture of being more towards adoptive and foster care, and really wrapping around the members of our church that are currently doing that and supporting them first, and then moving towards encouraging people to adopt and foster care. So a lot of reading about that. So.
What's the best piece of professional advice you've received?
Start with why.
Yes. What's the worst piece of professional advice you've received?
I want everybody to hear this is under the worst piece of advice, and it really was, so don't get mad at me. But I got told once that you shouldn't hire women.
Yeah.
Terrible.
I'm not going to disclose anything, but they're just, you know, they'll get married and then they'll want to start a family
worst.
And they won't stay with you and da 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 da. And wow, yeah, it is absolutely horrible advice. And in fact, our company now, I think we have more women in our office than we do guys now for the first time, because right now there's only three of us guys. Everybody else is a lady now. So it's awesome.
Cool.
It's great. It's wonderful.
What's your favorite color?
Green.
If you could take us to one restaurant in your town, where would we go?
Probably to Groucho's. Yeah, it's just like a local sandwich shop. I'm really big into finding local sandwich shops in town. They've got some amazing 45 formula sauce, which is some Thousand Island dill combination. I don't know. The ingredients are secret. They won't even tell you. Nobody knows. But it's really good. At least I think it's really good. It's probably just me. If you came, it would probably be horrible. And I'm just brainwashed. But to me, it's really good. So.
What's your favorite board game?
My favorite? I don't get a chance to lot. Well, I do get to play a lot of board games with my kids. So I'd probably say Candyland right now. So,
I love Candyland.
My boys, just anytime they get a chance to play, you know, will you play with me, Daddy? And sure, what do you want to play? Candyland. And they just get so excited when I say, yes, I'll play Candyland with them. So that's got to be my favorite right now.
All right. Last question. Hulu or Netflix?
Netflix. Yeah, I haven't watched Hulu in a long time. So.
Very cool. So that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
I'm on Twitter @Buckeye_fan. I got that name a long time ago, and it has, you know, I'm a Buckeye fan, but that's about it. You know, it's not some cool development screen name, but Buckeye fan. And then really, if you just want to talk or whatever, just reach out to me, andy@debosweb.com. I'm also big on the Expression Engine Slack community, so you can jump on the Slack there and ask me anything. So.
Awesome. Thanks, Andy. This was a really great conversation.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys.
Control Click is produced by Bright Umbrella, a web services agency obsessed with happy clients. Today's podcast would not be possible without the support of this episode's sponsors. Many thanks to FosterMaid and JumpChart.
We'd also like to thank our hosting partner, ArchisTech.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter @ControlClickCast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you liked this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both. Links are in our show notes and on our site.
Don't forget to tune into our next episode when Denise Jacobs returns to the show to talk about banishing our inner critics. Be sure to check out controlclickcast.com/schedule for more upcoming topics.
This is Leah Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.